Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Mr. John Quirk. And Mr. Quirk has been with intelligence agencies for many years. He's now retired and has a private consulting firm that tracks money in banks around the world and helps people recover their savings that sometimes are confiscated by unscrupulous organizations. Under any circumstances, Mr. Quirk is going to bring us up to date with his interpretation of what is actually taking place throughout the world today in the Middle East and South America. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Stan. Good to be with you.
Well, you notice, I noticed here just in this last couple of days that the price of gold and silver and precious metals has been going up, and I always look upon them sort of like the canary in the mine shaft. And when they're going up at a phenomenal and unexpected rate, it means that maybe something big is in the offing. What's your interpretation of what's going on? We know we live in uncertain times, but something big, I think, is on the verge of happening.
Right. Well, you're right in your analysis, and analogy is very good about the canary. As you know, I haven't been really an alarmist about Iran or what's happening with Venezuela or China, but I've been trying to, over the last, couple of years, alert people to probably what the U.S. position is and what's happening. And we are coming to a deadline, and what probably is most likely going to happen in several focus points of the world, mainly something to do with Iran, Venezuela, China, and Russia, is going to start to accelerate right after next week's elections. And it's basically, when President Bush got into office, he talked about the axis of evil. Things have not been going well with Iran. They are ignoring the UN. They're ignoring the EU. They have tremendous resentment against the United States. Just the other day, they test-fired a series of missiles in the Persian Gulf, basically saying, look, if the United States moves naval forces in, which we are doing, the Eisenhower Task Force is on its way to the Persian Gulf, we are ready against you. And what the other thing that's happening, and people that have been analyzing things the last couple of years, mainly the Russians, the Venezuelans, and the Chinese, our adversaries, are all working together against the United States. And as I've predicted for the last couple of years, I still believe that we will go after Iran sometime in January.
Well, my understanding is that, it's not only the Eisenhower, but the Enterprise Task Force, the Boxer Task Force, and several others, are converging on the Persian Gulf region at this time, and even other nations. Ships are there. There's some ships from the Indian Navy. And then my understanding is there's a large task force just off the west coast of Lebanon there in the eastern Mediterranean. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, that's right. And, linking to what you originally said about gold and financial, just to throw out some statistics here, 20% of the world's oil comes through the Straits of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf, mainly out of Iran, and I'm also talking about Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Azerbaijan, and even parts of Central Asia, and a little bit out of Russia.
Hold that thought right now, please. All right, John, pick this. Our guest today is John Quirk. He's worked with the intelligence agencies for many years. He's worked in Iran. He's worked in the Middle East. And right now, he's retired at the present time. But he's good enough to come on with us to keep us abreast of what's going on. And he was just talking about, of course, the naval task forces, which are converging not only on the Persian Gulf area at the present time, but certainly in the converging in the eastern Mediterranean off the coast of Lebanon. And for no reason at all other than the fact that something big is about to occur. So you pick the story up there, please.
Well, you know, as we always talk about, we look at the American side of things. We are looking at the United States, with some pressure from Israel, is planning to launch attacks against Iran to take out their 460-plus nuclear facilities, not to invade, not to damage the people of Iran, not to have tremendous ground forces land, but to take out their nuclear facilities. Now, let's look at what's happening with the other side of the world. The Israelis feel politically, economically, and militarily under siege from both terrorist groups, Hamas and Hezbollah. They have irrefutable evidence that the Iranians, through Syria, is supplying Hezbollah with hundreds of millions of dollars, even more than before when the Israeli attacked them, and they're supplying all types of missiles and weapons. The United States is being lobbied hard by AIPAC and other pro-Israeli groups to help Israel and do something. That's the Israeli point of view, more or less, okay? Let's look at the Russian and the Chinese view. The Chinese are really starting to flex their muscles. Even though the U.S. State Department keeps issuing these reports that the Chinese are helping us with North Korea and there's better bonds between America and China, it's ridiculous. The Chinese want us to have problems with North Korea. They've been dragging their feet for 6 years, and I think they're going to continue to do it. They don't want to settle the problem with North Korea, even though the U.S. State Department says, well, they really do because they don't want lots of North Korean refugees, or they don't want the North Koreans to invade South Korea or upset the balance of power. The bottom line is the Chinese want to hurt U.S. foreign policy, and one of the best ways to do that is by dragging their feet and forcing the North Koreans to back down. The Russians also have had a foreign policy that's been accelerating in the last 2 years completely against America. They resent American expansion in banking.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just saying, of course, that the Chinese purport to be our friends, and the State Department insists that they are, but the truth of the matter is the Chinese are doing everything they can to hurt the United States and make things more difficult for us, and the same is really true of the Russians who purport to be our friends, and our government keeps saying that they're our friends, but the truth of the matter is that they really are not. So you pick the story up there, John.
Well, the Russians, in particular, are doing everything possible to split Europe from the United States. They're using energy as an extortion against England and other parts of Poland and France and so on and so forth. They've just put tremendous pressure on the European Union. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development is moving to Moscow. It's a EU bank moving to Moscow, because Putin wants to control all the money that's being invested in the former Russian republics that are very close to the United States. So Russia is using energy. A lot of the whole world situation today economically revolves around energy. The Americans are gluttons for energy. We have the upper hand now. We control most of the energy in the world. The Chinese need it desperately. They're signing agreements with Sudan, Venezuela. They're expanding the pipeline in Venezuela. The Russians are using energy, natural gas, oil, for extortion purposes in Europe. The United States is using its military treaties and expansion of its superpower status to get more oil. And it's not always about oil, but in the next year or so it's going to be all about oil. The first step is Iran. We are going to stop them or trying to stop them from developing nuclear energy. The Iranians have already said, not only will we fight you Americans, we're going to fight your ships, we may in fact not only attack Israel, we may attack Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and block supplies from Azerbaijan to hurt us economically. We also know that Chavez in Venezuela has made an agreement with Iran that if there is a war or if there's a military action against Iran, he will hold up and divert oil supplies from the United States to the Chinese. So the three major chess players here, China, Russia, and the United States, are all vying in one way or another for something to do with oil. The minor players that are against the United States, Iran and Venezuela and a few other countries, are locking themselves into helping China and Russia against America. So in January, we'll probably see the following. We'll probably see massive naval and military attacks against Iran's nuclear facilities. We'll probably see the Israelis accelerate and start again their efforts against Hamas in the Gaza Strip and Hezbollah. And a lot of the Arab countries around them won't do anything. They're actually afraid of what Iran could do. So it all means, getting back to your initial entree on gold, it means some type of effect on the world economy. Europe will probably suffer. There could be a downturn in the United States, which would increase even our deficit, even go higher. And the Bush administration feels it'll be a very slow, temporary type of attack. So their credibility is really on the line because of all the troubles that we're having with Iraq. So that's my take on it. We'll see what happens, but I think it's pretty inevitable that at least there'll be some type of military action against Iran in January or February.
Well, of course, I hope you're wrong, but I'm afraid you're not. And we just reading this morning where these massive naval demonstrations over there off the coast of Bahrain. Apparently, the Saudis have a small navy, nothing very large, but their ships aren't there. They've been placed on alert, guarding their oil terminals, which are actually there in the saltwater terminals, and they're afraid that the Al-Qaeda or somebody else would try to hit those, and if they did, that would certainly disrupt the oil supplies coming to the United States and throughout the rest of the world. So they really believe that there's something big is about to happen. We just don't know quite what it is.
Well, the Revolutionary Guards in Iran have been training large numbers of counterinsurgency and building up patrol boats. And while Israel initially thought it was directed against them, people say, oh, it makes sense that the Iranians, who've threatened Israel on a number of occasions, are going to attack Israel. In fact, the Iranians want to disrupt oil supplies and might attack, either through their proxies or themselves, might attack the oil facilities in Kuwait and in Saudi Arabia. You see, what has happened with a lot of intelligence analysts, and they meet regularly from Russia and from China and from Venezuela now, and certainly from Iran and Syria, they say the way to really hurt the United States is economically, okay? Cut off their oil supply, interrupt their oil supply, disrupt their oil supply, and their economy will go down the drains, and the economy of Europe will be damaged, and the Europeans will either split from the United States or become even more anti-American than they already are. The United States' position is, look it, we've got to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons before they give the nukes to somebody. The conundrum, if you will, is the relationship of the nuclear plans that the North Koreans have. And I've said for a long time, I think that'll be solved diplomatically. I think the United States is in a quandary of what to do with North Korea. We're letting the Chinese handle it, but at the same time, the Chinese have told the Americans, the only way you're going to get the North Koreans to back down is if you give them lots of money, lots of fuel, and lots of aid. And the Bush administration does not want to pay extortion, then they don't want to do it.
But, of course, the Clinton administration did do that, and people have forgotten that in 1994, Bill Clinton authorized massive oil shipments, massive food shipments, and building two nuclear power plants in North Korea. In other words, we were supporting this ruthless, tyrannical dictatorship if they just promised not to go ahead and build a nuclear weapon, which they proceeded to do. And then, of course, when George Bush got in, why, he said, well, we're not going to continue this. And then he allowed the South Koreans, who we really have a tremendous amount of influence with, to pick up and make the supplies to the North Korea to maintain this ruthless Stalinist dictatorship. So much of this just doesn't make sense.
Well, the other thing is the U.S. Secret Service has issued last year a very definitive, brilliant report on the fact that when Clinton gave a lot of the aid, the North Koreans transferred that into hard currency, money laundering through a number of banks in Macau, and they bought tremendously expensive web offset presses. They are now the number one counterfeiter next to Iran of $100 bills. And George Bush looked at that, and he said, this does it for me. We are just not going to put up with a North Korea that not only is developing nuclear weapons, but is counterfeiting hundreds of millions of dollars. The Chinese ignore all of that because they want us to have problems. So I think the Chinese and North Koreans look at it, the Chinese and the Russians, rather, look at it a more long-term effect. They know that they cannot stop this juggernaut of American superpower ability. So what they're trying to do is work with Venezuelans against us, help the Iranians against us, try to split Europe with us, and do everything that they can to block, thwart, and disrupt the United States. And if the United States made any mistakes, and I don't think they've made a lot of mistakes, I mean, I'm in a minority about Iraq or Afghanistan, but I think we're really doing the right thing, we're trying to do the right thing, is we probably have become too aggressive after the Soviet Union fell. When a power falls, there's a vacuum, and another country fills the vacuum. Well, the United States was already a superpower, but we've accelerated in a lot of areas overseas. We're trying to control banking and all the banking havens. We've expanded military. We've expanded foreign military assistance to about 60 countries. We're giving hundreds of billions of dollars away, especially to Muslim countries, to stop terrorism. We're putting educational institutions all over the world. The FBI has expanded its legal operations overseas. And with all of this, we are trying to increase and develop and support the sea lanes. Under the Clinton administration, he really ruined our Navy and our maritime ability. The Reagan 600-ship goal is now down to about 255 ships. I mean, we're still much further ahead than the Russians are in terms of any kind of major ships and the Chinese. But the Chinese are gradually building. They're using a lot of their revenue to go into Africa and to Latin America. They're cooperating with the Russians on building a huge blue water navy. So Iran, attacking Iran, is going to be a very big challenge for America. We're probably going to be condemned by the UN. It's rather useless anyway. We're going to be probably questioned by the European Union, or the European Union, who's lost a lot of their will anyway. Not all the countries, but some of them will criticize the United States. And it'll present an opportunity for China and Russia to start kind of a new aligned movement against the United States.
And, of course, where America is vulnerable is not militarily. America is vulnerable financially, our monetary system.
Absolutely.
We're having to borrow somewhere between $2 and $3 billion every day just to maintain our balance of payments, to pay for all the money that we're giving away throughout the world.
And it's a good point, Stan. And ironically, a lot of that borrowing is being done from China.
And I really hate to think of the monetary destiny of the United States. Representing on the good wishes of communist China, which hates America, will always hate America, and one day, of course, will be, I believe, at war with America. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And certainly one of the things I don't think most people are really aware of is the fact that today Russia is, if not the leading oil exporter, is very close to it, and certainly is the leading exporter of natural gas, which gives us a tremendous leverage on Europe, and they're doing everything they can, of course, to draw Europe away from the United States into a separate bloc. And that should happen, why the close relationships we've had with Europe will be gone and simply a remembrance of things past. And that will really sort of shift the balance of power in some respects, won't it?
Yes, and there's a lot of other things going on to chip away with American power in Europe. The Venezuelans, little Venezuela that has billions and billions in oil reserves, is starting to try to influence EU votes and decision-making, especially in places like Spain, where they're offering lots of lucrative contracts to the Cubans. The Venezuelans are paying for it. And into Venezuela and the Latin America. They're trying to wean away the French. They're trying to wean away the Belgians. They're trying to get a hold of the Italians and other countries, Portugal and so on, in a diplomatic way and a way of using money. You see, the Chinese have 50 times the amount of revenue that the old Soviets had. The Soviets spent a lot of money in military and propaganda against America, subversion and espionage, but the Chinese have 50 times that money. And Venezuela has more money than a lot of the old non-alignment countries in Africa, Asia, and Latin America put together. And their foreign policy is basically anti-American. Wherever they can hurt what they call American imperialism, they're going to do it. And they're doing it on a number of different levels. And again, it's ironic because the money they're using is money that the United States pays for Venezuelan oil. So we have some serious problems financially in the world because the Chinese, the Iranians, which have a lot of oil money, not as much as they used to, and the Venezuelans are using their revenue to fight the United States all over the world. And of course, you have Russia and China previously covertly in the background cheering them on. Now they're becoming more overt that, listen, we should not let America be the only superpower. We should unify and stop them wherever we can. And there's going to be conflicts. There's going to be, I think, not just counterinsurgencies, but over the next 10 years, major crisis and major conflict.
And, of course, one of the things I think is very interesting is Hugo Chavez is doing everything he can to get the countries of South America to unite into a common trading bloc which will oppose America here. We're establishing a northern trading bloc with Mexico and Canada and the United States. And Hugo Chavez then is organizing South America, to come in conflict with us. We would like, of course, to unite them under our leadership. Hugo Chavez wants to unite them, the countries of South America, under his leadership. Do you think he's going to succeed?
Well, I think he's going to spend a lot of money, but I think he's going to fail in most of his entrees. I think that Brazil is pulling away from him. He's failed in Ecuador. He's interfered in Mexican politics and the military. He's failed there. He has an ally in Bolivia, but that's not really a threat to the United States. He is funding Noriega in Nicaragua, but he's doing things in Panama. But I don't think he's going to
fail. Hold that just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just talking about, of course, what's going on in South America with Hugo Chavez. And, of course, Hugo Chavez has a good friend in Morales in Bolivia, the new president there, who certainly is moving rapidly to gain more control over the mines and oil wells and all the other things in Bolivia. And, of course, Hugo Chavez has tried to intervene in Mexican politics, and there's tremendous unrest south of the border because, of course, most of the people, or many of the people, certainly feel that the election was stolen. Whether it was or not, we don't know. It was a very close election, and there were a lot of questions about it. But be that as it may, why, Hugo Chavez had a hand there. Hugo Chavez is working all throughout South America. Of course, John says that Brazil is trying to pull away from Chavez simply because he's a radical Marxist. But we have the whole Western Hemisphere, the southern part of the Western Hemisphere, in increasing turmoil. So you pick the story up there, John.
Well, I think the danger with Chavez is what we found out in the last week or two. He built a massive bio-warfare center with Cubans and Iranians 2 hours from Venezuela. He has Iranians at the Ivik nuclear facility, and he is purchasing large amounts of arms from Russia and from China, command and control systems from China, $3 billion in arms, most of it's junk from Russia. But all his policies in Latin America, kind of a new left Marxist policies, are really a Trojan horse, I believe, for him trying to deliver a weapons of mass destruction to the United States. You don't spend millions of dollars and build a bio-warfare unit in Venezuela unless you're planning to use it. I mean, who's he going to use it on? The Colombians? The Brazilians? I mean, we're the target, okay? And Castro is behind it, and it's worrisome to anybody that's in weapons of mass destruction policy. And then some of the other things he's doing, the alignments that he's making, are very scary. And then, you know, we've got a lot of issues in our own right that are problems with immigration that he's trying to exploit, this whole proposal with the NAFTA superhighway that people want to build a 5-football-field-wide highway from Laredo, Texas, through Dallas up to Kansas City. I mean, you can go on the Internet, type in NAFTA superhighway, and they have maps and charts, and President Bush pushed this through with Vicente Fox and Paul Martin of Canada, and it's not all completely funded, but it's what I call a conundrum. We're building walls, 700-mile walls, to stop illegals coming into the country, and then we're opening up this NAFTA super highway, which is going to let trucks go through a train. They've got a train planned and passenger highways all the way from Mexico and so on. So what that is, basically, is the globalists and the elitists in the United States who've been talking about a one-world government, one-world philosophy, see that as the solution to a lot of problems. You know, they hope maybe in 100 years Canada, Latin America, and the United States will be one entity. And the United States and everybody else will have to give up their sovereignty. So we have all these diverging things going on in the United States, and what I'm more worried about is our internal politics, the chaos and the dissension and the possibility of these issues pitting Americans against Americans, not just Democrats and Republicans, liberals against conservatives, but regional areas, you know, the West against the Midwest against the Southwest, and so on and so forth. So we're facing all these problems, and they're probably problems of a growing superpower, and no one really knows. Nobody has a crystal ball where it's all going to come out at.
Well, I think we see increasing disillusionment among the people of this country, certainly the war as it drags on over there in Iraq. And then of course, what we're seeing as far as the breakdown, the scandals within the Christian church, people we look to as our leaders, you know, our moral leaders. And then we begin to wonder, are they really the moral leaders that we think they are? So I think that there's an unrest in the country that probably has never existed to this degree before. And I believe we're on the edge of some serious financial problems. It looks like, of course, the housing market is beginning to contract. Certainly our jobs are moving overseas. More and more people are coming in here to take the jobs that Americans have had before. Certainly wage levels are going down. Pensions are disappearing or certainly being cut back. Healthcare grows and more expensive, and yet many times the employers will not pay for it. I think we're seeing a change in America. I think we're seeing a disillusionment, and this doesn't bode well for the future. We'll be back here in just a moment with John Quirk as we explore what's going on and maybe what we can do. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with John Quirk about the things that are going on, and of course his view as far as what is going to happen in the Middle East. This, to me, of course, is one of the biggest issues right now, and if we do become involved with, in attacking Iran, I would think that Iran would feel quite justified in doing everything they could to disrupt and undermine the fabric of our society. I mean, after all, if somebody was to bomb 460 sites in America, I think we would retaliate. And I don't think that Iran is people there are stupid. I would think that there were many things they could do, not only to disrupt the oil supplies in the world, but even to make it more difficult for our beleaguered troops who are already in Iraq. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. To the Iranians, we wouldn't be just attacking 456 nuclear sites. They believe we're trying to destroy their religion, their extreme fundamentalist religion, which runs their government. It's a fundamentalist government. The second area of it is they have plans for a Shia domination that goes from Iran to Syria to Iraq to Lebanon. And you might say they're winning almost. In Iraq, we're getting closer and closer to complete chaos or civil war, and it involves the Shia against the Sunni, which has been going on for probably 1,300 years in the Muslim world. So the Iranians have a lot to gain. They could gain a better foothold if we attack them. They have a lot to gain. They could get sympathy from Muslim countries because the Iranians are not Arabs. They are Muslims, as you know. But they have always had a long-standing animosity with other Arab countries. They want to bring the idea not so much between Arab and Persian, Arab and Iranian. They want to bring religion back. They want a Shia dominance. So their Shia dominance would be the United States attacks them. This is what they believe. The Shias would unite. They would unite in Lebanon, Syria. They're already united with them in Iraq and are casualties are going up like mad, and they would use that to do several things. Control more oil, kick the United States out of the region, okay, and if they don't eliminate Israel, to really make it very difficult for Israel to function. That's at least their idea. But underlying all that is that they want to be left alone, and they want to develop not just a nuclear program, they want to keep their fundamentalist religion. And the United States is the opposite. We want to see an Iran without a fundamentalist government.
Hold that thought right there, John. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk. And, of course, he's talking about how, the Iranians want to expand their Shia-dominated religion into Iraq, where, of course, we're doing everything we can. The new constitution that we have now establishes a nation under Sharia law. Before it was a secular nation, now it is a Muslim, Shia Muslim nation under a mullahocracy, and of course expand that down into Syria and Lebanon and unite all the Shia Muslims in the world, and they seem to be moving rapidly in that direction. Now, before we do go on, though, John, I wanted to give you an opportunity to get out your website, because of course John does work with recovering funds that have been lost or misplaced or confiscated by banks. And how can people get in touch with you and get on your website and get some of the other information that you have available?
Well, thank you. Our website is it's a long one. It's www.assetlocationinternational.com, and it has a list of my publications and what we do in national security areas. Our email is irgglobal@aol.com. And on this Venezuelan Biowarfare Center, I'd be happy to email you articles about that. It's irgglobal@aol.com. Thank you.
All right. And that asset recovery, what is it now?
It's Asset Location International. And basically, we work on major fraud cases, international cases, mainly where Americans are defrauded through private placement or Ponzi schemes or Nigerian scams, and we locate and recover the money, often using the U.S. government, and some of their treaties to recover the money for them if they're put in places like Guernsey or Switzerland or Liechtenstein or Luxembourg. And on that point, since 9/11, white-collar crime and corruption has expanded, and the federal government on the investigative level, mainly organizations like the FBI, are either completely overwhelmed or getting out of the white-collar crime business. They're focusing more on terrorism. And we have frauds against religious groups, a tremendous increase in mortgage fraud all over the country, Ponzi schemes, pyramid schemes, private placement schemes, usually run by foreigners overseas against Americans in this country.
I think probably most of our listeners have gotten that letter from the Nigerian finance minister who wants to get the money out that has been there, and because of the restrictions that he can't get it out. He just wants the number of your account so he can put all these millions or tens of millions of dollars into your account. Just send him your bank account and you'll get 30% of it. How does that scheme work?
Well, they're brilliant fraudsters, the Nigerians. They should work at CIA because they're great at cover and identities. They have several scams. They have what's called the 419 scam, which is involving counterfeit currency, and you put stains on it, and you pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for the money. They mail 10 million letters to the postal system a year. They send hundreds of thousands of emails, and they basically con you into believing you're going to get a lot of money, and then they want 10,000, 20, 30, they keep you on the hook. So, and the cases that we have increased. We are working for Amish people in the Midwest that have lost millions, Pentecostals that have lost hundreds of millions, evangelicals that have lost millions, and a variety of athletes from the NBA to the NFL who have lost money through these scams to regular wealthy businessmen. And the fraudsters are getting very, very adept at research. They target where wealthy people are, Boca Raton, Florida, Beverly Hills, Naperville, Illinois, Westchester County, New York, the Dallas area. They work those areas on all these schemes, and a lot of the Americans are into these get-rich-quick schemes. They're greedy, and they send hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars overseas, and these con men, usually Nigerians, Ghanaians, Indians, a variety of foreigners, Belgians, French, whatever, are just draining hundreds of billions of dollars. We have one case alone in which one man, a foreigner, took $1 billion from Americans and routed money through a number of banks in the United States. We have a case with the Amish people. They've lost about $30 million on these scams. And there's a group of Pentecostals that have lost up to $300 million through what's called the Malaysian Ponzi scheme. So, and the United States government is hard-pressed for two reasons. One, they're focused so much on terrorism, and two, a lot of the cooperating law enforcement agencies overseas won't work with us because of anti-Americanism.
Well, so, I think the old adage is, if it seems to be too good to be true, it probably is.
You're right.
And remember that, of course, the two things that drives most people, one is greed and the other is fear. And it's greed that gets you in to one of these Ponzi schemes, and, of course, fear once they've got you, because chances are, unless you have somebody like John working with you, why you're going to lose most of what you've invested.
And you now have whole huge criminal organizations run out of Russia. I mean, Russia's a criminal country for all practical purposes. Nigeria, Ghana, other parts of West Africa. And now it's starting to spread into parts of Asia, especially places like Malaysia that are very hard. It's an Islamic country, Islamic laws, Islamic banking. It's very hard for us to get information, and under certain treaties, we don't have treaties with some of these countries to recover the money. So that's another aspect of draining money out of Americans. I mean, when you're talking about the financial intelligence crisis that's building, it's the amounts of money that we are spending in Iraq, the future amounts of money we're going to spend in going after Iran, the amounts of money that we're supplying to other foreign governments and homeland and maritime security, and the amount of fraud that is hitting the United States. And I fear probably in late spring, not an economist, but I think based on my international background, I think in late spring we could be seeing a very strong downturn in the American economy.
I share your concern. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to John Quirk, who really has contacts with the intelligence communities throughout the world. He actually lectures at a school. He's a professor at a diplomatic school in Paris where they actually people come from various countries all throughout the world to be kept abreast of what's going on. Are you still doing that, John?
Yes, I'm a professor at the Center for Diplomatic and Strategic Studies in Paris, and I've also taught at the London Diplomatic Academy. I teach intelligence and national security, anti-terrorism, and a course on U.S. foreign policy. And now we're starting to offer courses on anti-corruption to train basically diplomats and responsible people in governments how to look for money laundering or frauds. I mean, even African countries and Asian countries are being victimized by Ponzi schemes. So I'm the only American at the school, and I've had to put up with a certain amount of anti-Americanism over the last few years. But there are other parts of Europe that are getting closer to the United States. I think there'll be a political change in France that'll be very positive towards the United States compared to Mr. Chirac, who did many things to hurt us. England is certainly going to have a change. It may not be all that positive for the United States. It probably will be, but Tony Blair was a big supporter of the United States. We may be losing Italy and Spain and Belgium and a few other countries. I think Germany is going to come back very strong with the United States. And, of course, Eastern Europe loves us. The Poles, we're building two huge bases in Romania and Bulgaria, Poland, the Czech Republic, and these countries, because we supported them against Russia, are coming back. We have a lot of positive, you never hear about it, the media doesn't report it, but a lot of positive relationships with Azerbaijan, Armenia, Lithuania, Georgia, Kazakhstan, Central Asia. They're very, very pro-American, so it's not all negative. And, of course, a lot of the countries like Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, even Libya, Tunisia, and especially a very strong country, Algeria, is very, very pro-American. They're afraid of fundamentalism. They're afraid in downturns of their economy with a nuclear Iran. So we have a lot of friends. The media doesn't seem to report that. They seem to focus on the negatives always. But we have a lot of strong oil-producing countries that support America.
All right. Well, our telephone number once again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and of course we'd like to get John on a regular basis to bring us up to date, at least as far as his interpretation of where we're going. And of course my concern is that may very well soon be involved in a confrontation with Iran. I hope and pray that it doesn't occur, but certainly when we see the three or four major a naval task force, and we're talking about literally hundreds of ships over in the Persian Gulf today engaged in military exercises. Well, you can imagine how the American people would feel if just 10 miles off our international waters, why we had the combination of communist China and communist North Vietnam and communist Vietnam and communist Russia, or Russia, if you want to call that, but I still think there's an element of the same old totalitarianism there, all having their naval exercises. I think we might feel threatened, and And I really feel that's what's going on today, and that it just doesn't make sense that we would be doing everything we can to, you know, to inflame the Iranians. And, of course, even more incredible is the fact that the Iranians are doing everything they can to inflame the Americans. I mean, making foolish statements, you know, just this last week, why President Ahmadinejad of Iran was threatening Europe. If they didn't stop their supporting Israel and begin supporting the Palestinians, they could expect, you know, retaliation. I mean, he's threatening Europe. This little guy wears this sort of a little coat, and he's suddenly threatening all of Europe, and he certainly threatened Israel. He's even threatening the United States. And why are they doing these things? Do you have any idea, John? This is not logical. You would think they would be trying to, you know, at least appear to be conciliatory to try to avoid any sort of military action against them.
Well, as I said, they really believe we are trying to destroy their fundamentalist government, their religion. And it's interesting, this week they showed off three new missiles. It's called the Nur, the Kosar, and the Nasser. And let me just give you a little conspiracy theory here. A lot of the insides of the missiles, the triggering devices, were developed by Russians. Most of the missile hardware were developed by Pakistani and North Koreans, and the Chinese supplied a lot of the metal for the shells. So they know they want to do, all of those countries are in it together against the United States. The United States has done everything diplomatically with the Iranians. Israel is a strong ally. They are extremely worried based on the president's statements of Iran that he wants to destroy them. Israel took it on the chin. They weren't able to wipe out Hezbollah and Hamas, and Hamas and Hezbollah have come back even stronger. So, I mean, it's terrible to say this. It's not diplomatic, but the Iranians are asking for it. I mean, they've thumbed their noses at the European Union and some of their biggest contract partners like France and Germany and England are now on our side. They weren't on our side. They weren't on our side 2 years ago. The European Union is with America. The UN passed the resolutions. Tacitly, they're with us, but, you know, they don't really have much of a spine, and they're kind of irrelevant. So, again, it's all about the United States stopping a country that wants to develop nuclear weapons. And whether you like President Bush or Rumsfeld or Cheney, they all make one very good point. The Iranians would probably give a nuclear weapon to Hezbollah. So would they use it against Saudi Arabia? The Saudis think so. Could they use it against Azerbaijan? I just talked to a very prominent politician, a former student of mine in Azerbaijan, and he says, John, we're getting ready for the war, and we are next to Iran. We speak Farsi. We're like Iranians in Azerbaijan, but we want America to do something to stop Iran from being the regional power. And if you don't do it now, it's going to be worse 5 years from now. They could try to attack Israel. They could try to use it against Europe. They could try to extort. And they could launch a nuclear missile, and it could possibly wipe out a good part of our fleet in the Straits of Hormuz. So, or somewhere else in the Persian Gulf or in the Sea of Oman. So, I mean, I believe it's a fait accompli that we will go to war unless the Iranians diplomatically agree to give up all their nuclear plants.
But of course, we don't ask the North Koreans to do that. The Iranians are working. They may be 5 to 10 years before they'll have a bomb. The North Koreans already have a bomb. Why are we so much more concerned about the wicked Iranians than we are about the wicked North Koreans?
Well, it goes back to oil, as I said. We get 20% of the world's oil goes through Iran, doesn't go through North Korea. We use 30% of it. 50% of the oil that comes out of the Gulf goes to the United States and Japan. So North Korea is not a country that has lots of resources, okay? The other thing is we don't have the ability, except with tactical nuclear weapons, to take out North Korea. We don't want to use, though. We've only got 30 or 40,000 troops in Korea and some bases in Japan, and we don't have the ability to stop the North Koreans. We're hoping that the North Koreans collapse. And this is the Bush policy. If they don't engage in the six-party talks, and we've also heard rumors in the last 2 days that the Koreans are backing down out of that. They want a huge payment of fuel and money before they actually go to the six-party talks. They're not going to get that out of George Bush, I can tell you that. So what's going to happen is the United States will put on more pressure, and maybe they will collapse economically.
But, of course, as long as the South Koreans keep financing them and keep providing them with the things, there's really no chance of going to. In other words, you have to get a total embargo, and South Korea, despite the fact we have troops there, is not going to stop financing North Korea.
Well, and the Chinese covertly helped them, and
right.
The Chinese said they're not going to really impose or monitor or regulate the sanctions that the UN approved of.
Now, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've listened and listened very carefully. You've heard a lot of very important information. Well, our guest today is John Quirk. John, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up today's program.
Well, I think that if you look at a schedule of things, the November elections will tell you a lot, because shortly after the November elections, and maybe it'll delayed after the Christmas holidays, Americans don't like trouble during the holidays, Iraq is probably going to get worse. There'll be a movement by the military, and you'll see all kinds of jockeying with the European Union, the UN, to take action against Iran. And probably Israel will start revealing and supplying us with better intelligence than the CIA has about how close the Iranians are to developing nuclear weapons. And then I think President Bush will get a consensus from both the Democrats, Europe, liberals, conservatives will join, presidential candidates will join, and come to a consensus that we have to do something about Iran. I think when the other shoe drops after Iran, there's going to be trouble with Venezuela, North Korea, and most importantly, with the United States economy. So I think that we're going to be braced for some very tough times between January and June of the next year.
And I certainly agree with you. And I think the greatest danger to America is not, even being cut off from oil. But I think the major danger, of course, is the financial stability of our nation. I think the average American doesn't believe we could have real financial problems and a real financial contraction or collapse. Call it what you will. But don't you think that many of the people throughout the world will do everything they can to hurt us financially, since they can't hurt us militarily?
Yes, I think, except in the case of the Europeans, they would be hurt even more probably with a war. Travel would stop, tourism would stop, they'd be angry at us. The people that control a lot of our financial destiny are really the Chinese and the oil producers. So if there's we didn't talk about this, if there is any kind of attacks on oil facilities or any interdiction, even though we have a lot of reserves and we're getting oil from Alaska and Mexico and the Gulf, there will be a perception, and that could affect the stock market. People could stop spending money. Consumer spending could go down. And all these good things in the economy would turn around, like 4.5% employment that we have. The stock market is booming now. Everybody's got 2 or 3 cars, 5 computers. I mean, middle class.
John, we're out of time. We could go on for a good while, but thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed the program. And, of course, as you know, we do talk through the breaks. If you'd like to get the entire conversation with John Quirk, who's been with the intelligence and has ties to intelligence all throughout the world, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, it combine this with what we have with some of our other regular guests, and, of course, you are going to see that we are in for some very real problems. If it was just one person saying it, I would say, well, their opinion. But as we talk to people with their finger on the pulse of what's going on, I think we're getting closer and closer. to a world catastrophe. So begin to make your preparations, not only fiscally and financially, but also as far as spiritually, because if you're not prepared spiritually for what lies ahead, you're not going to be able, of course, to survive the difficult times that are coming. Well, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Our DVDs or videos, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, The Rape of the Soul, and so many others. And, of course, I'm actually in some of these. Don't look very good, but at least we're there. We're trying to get the word out. And other people, of course, have consulted us, and we've been acted in capacity in these films. Not acting, you're just telling it just like I'm sitting here and giving you my impression. So all of those videos are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And if we talk too fast for you, go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, RadioLiberty.com, and they're all listed there. And each one of them tells a different message, a different part of the story about the attack on America and the very real conspiracy against God and against this nation, which was once a Christian nation. It is no longer a Christian nation. And if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll find out why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. Nobody will ever tell you, but you'll find it in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And of course, we carry so many other books on Masonry, on the secret societies. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies. To understand what's going on, we hope that maybe you'll go up to our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, you'll pull down our August and September newsletters, and you'll copy them, and you'll distribute them, and you'll help us to get the information out. That's RadioLiberty.com, the August or September newsletters. If you don't have them, we'll be glad to send you free copies of those newsletters, or at least one of them. Of course, we hope that you'll join the Radio Liberty family. Quite frankly, we need your help. We need your financial support to keep doing what we're doing. And if you'd like to, of course, get a free copy of our newsletter, fine, but hopefully down the line, you'll join the Radio Liberty family, you'll subscribe to the newsletter, you'll become part of our support team. Now, we have a group of new four-tape sets. The Changing Church, which goes into the church growth movement. The World Peace Plan, put forward by Rick Warren, who's been chosen by Time Magazine and the Council on Foreign Relations to lead the evangelical movement in the United States. Globalism, the secret threat. There is a plan to create a one-world government and a new world religion, and they both go together. The impending police state, and there is a plan for dictatorship in America. If you have not yet got our four-tape set on concentration camps, or let me even suggest better, the concentration camp special, and it has a great deal of videos, you'll see one of the key congressmen talking about the plan to suspend the Constitution and put people into detention camps in the United States. We have a four-tape set on medical myths and what you need to know. The North American community, the demise of national sovereignty, and the truth about the Holocaust. Let me suggest that one. It's an excellent one. What really happened? And you'll hear people who actually were there and understand how it fits together. And then please pray for America. Please pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.